Chapter 17. Gambits. Sirion was alone, now that his latest victim lay dead. He sat with his back to the wall, breathing through spit-wet teeth. The gladius in his hand clattered to the stained decking. Shivers still rippled through him, pleasant aftershocks, as the man's death played out again in his mind. Real fear. Real terror, not the dull haze of pain that was all that remained among the astropaths and their other victims. This had been a vital, strong man with no desire to die. Sirion had cherished the look in his eyes as the gladius hacked and carved. He'd been scared to the bitter end. A dirty, unwarranted death, replete with begging deep in the ship's lower decks. The Night Lord had needed it. Water to a parched man after all the clinical infliction of pain on their captives. The crew member's final moments, as his weak fingers scratched uselessly at Sirion's faceplate, with a final perfect touch. Such delicious futility. He tasted that desperate fear, its actual tactile sweetness, like nectar on the tongue. A groan escaped his lips through the tingling rush of chemicals flooding his brain and blood. It was good to be a god's son, even one with a curse. Even when the gods themselves watched a little too closely. Someone somewhere was saying his name. Sirion ignored it. He had no mind to return to the higher decks and go back to the surgical carving that needed to be done. That could wait. The flood was beginning to fade now, and with it the tremor in his fingers. A strange name, that, the Flood. He couldn't recall when he'd first come to know his gift by that name, but it fit well enough. Latent psychic strength wasn't miraculously rare in the Eighth Legion, or any of the legions beyond, but his remained a source of quiet pride. Sirion had never been born psychic, or else his touch of the sixth sense was weak enough to go unnoticed by the extensive tests upon Legion indoctrination. It had simply happened over time, during the years they'd spent in the Eye of Terror. His awareness had blossomed like a flower opening in the light of the sun. The wordless whispers began at the edge of his hearing, night after night. Soon enough he could make sense from the hissed phrases, stealing a word here or a sentence there. Each of them shared a single strain of familiarity. They were all fearful utterances, unspoken but still audible, pulsing from those he killed. In the beginning, he'd merely found it amusing to hear the fearful final words of those he butchered.
"I do not see why you find this so funny,"
Talos had rebuked him.
"The Eye is influencing you." "There are those who bear worse curses than I," Sirion pointed out.
Talos had let it rest, never mentioning it again. Zal hadn't acted with the same restraint. The stronger the gift became, the less inclined Sirion was to hide it, and the filthier Zal found his presence.
"Corruption," Zal had called it.
He'd never trusted psychers, no matter the benevolence of the powers they claimed.
"Sirion!"
His name brought him back to the present, back to the stink of oily metal walls and newly dead bodies.
"What is it?"
he voxed back.
"It's Malkarion," came the response. He has awakened." "Is this a hilarious jest?"
Sirion hauled himself to his feet with a grunt.
"Deltrian swore there was no progress."
"Just get up here. Talos warned you about hunting in the ship's bowels when we have work to do."
"You're as bad as he is sometimes. Has the war sage spoken?"
"Not exactly."
Mercutian broke off the contact. Sirion started walking, leaving the bodies behind. No one would miss the lower deck trash that lay in bloody pieces behind him. Hunting in the Echo's deep levels was a forgivable sin, unlike Uzas's occasional mad slayings through Black Market and the officer decks, butchering the most valuable members of the crew.
"Hello!"
said a soft, quiet voice from nearby, too low to be human, but unrecognizable in the vox distortion. He looked up. There, in the chamber's iron rafters, one of the bleeding eyes crouched with a gargoyle's patience. Sirion felt his skin crawl, a rare sensation indeed.
Lucorifus.
Sirion, came the reply. I have been thinking.
And evidently following me.
The raptor nodded his sloping helm.
Aye, that also. Tell me, little Lord of Smiles, why do you come down here so often to sniff out the excretion reek of fear?
These are our hunting grounds, Sirion replied. Tello spends long enough down here himself.
Maybe so.
The raptor's head jerked once, either a flaw in his armor's systems or the result of warp-flawed genetics.
But he kills for release, for pleasure, for the surge of adrenaline stinging in his veins. He was born a killer, therefore he kills. You hunt to sate another appetite. An appetite that has bloomed within you, not one you were born with. I find that interesting. Oh, yes.
You may think whatever you choose.
The angled, almond-shaped eye lenses showed Sirion's reflection in miniature.
We have watched you, Sirion. The bleeding eyes see everything. We know your secrets. Yes, we do.
I have no secrets to keep, brother.
No.
Lycorifus's laugh was somewhere between a chuckle and a caw.
A lie doesn't become truth simply because you give it voice.
Sirion said nothing. He briefly considered reaching for his bolter. His fingers must have twitched, for Lycorifus laughed again.
Try it, Sirion. Just try.
Make your point, the warrior said.
Lycorifus leered.
Why must there be a point to a conversation between kindred? Do you assume every soul is as treacherous as you are? The bleeding eyes follow Talos because of that oldest axiom. He breeds trouble wherever he walks. The Primarch paid attention to him. And that is an interest still fascinating all these centuries later. He has a destiny one way or another. I wish to witness that destiny. You, however, have the potential to become a nuisance. How long have you fed on human fear?
Sirion breathed slowly before answering, suppressing the tempting flood of chemical stimulants from intravenous feeds in his wrists and spine.
A long time, decades, I have never kept track.
A very weak breed of psychic vampirism.
The raptor exhaled a thin breath of steam from his vocabulator grill.
I am not one to question the gifts of the warp.
Then why question me at all?
He realized his mistake as soon as the question left his lips. Delaying had cost him the edge of opportunity. From the corridor he'd come down, another of the bleeding eyes crawled on all fours, blocking the doorway.
Sirion,
it said, seeming to struggle with speech.
Yes, yes.
Varasha, he replied,
It was no surprise when another three raptors crawled out of the tunnel ahead, their sloping demon masks watching him with unblinking scrutiny.
"We question you," Lycoriphus rasped, "because, while I would never speak out against the warp's changes, I have much less patience for treachery so close to the prophet. Stability is vital now. He is planning something secret, something he has chosen not to share. We all sense it, like a static charge in the air. We walk now in the pressure of a storm yet to be." "We trust him," said one of the other raptors.
"We do not trust you," finished a third.
Lycoriphus's voice was ripened by a smile.
"Stability, Sirion. Remember that word. Now, run along and witness the war sage's flawed resurrection. And remember this talk. The bleeding eyes see all."
The raptors scattered back into the tunnels, worming their way deeper into the ship.
"That isn't good," Sirion said to himself in the silent darkness.
He was the last to arrive, entering the Hall of Reflection almost 30 minutes after the initial summons. The chamber's usual industry was halted in surreal immobility. None of the servitors went about their business, while dozens of low-tier Mechanicum adepts looked on in relative silence. If they communicated with each other, it was via means that the legionaries couldn't discern. Sirion walked to First Claw, who stood by the circular bulkhead entrance to one of the antechambers. The barrier itself was rolled open, revealing the stasis chamber within. Sirion felt something at the edge of his hearing, like the threat of thunder on the horizon. He cycled through his helm's audio receptor modes, picking up the same almost audible infrasound murmur, no matter the frequency.
"Do you hear that?" he asked Talos.
The prophet stood with Mercutian and Uzas, saying nothing. Varial and Deltrian conferred in hushed voices by the adept's central control tables.
"What's wrong?" Sirion asked.
Talos turned his sculled faceplate to him.
"We're still not certain."
"But Malkarion is awake."
Talos led him into the stasis chamber. Their boots sent resonant echoes clanging off the iron walls. Malkarion's sarcophagus remained on its marble plinth, chained in place, supported by hundreds of copper filament wires, power cables, and life support tubes. The sarcophagus displayed Malkarion's triumphant death in exquisite detail. Gold, adamantine, and bronze worked into a vision of a Night Lord victorious, head tilted back to roar at a starry sky. In one hand, the tail-crested helm of a White Scar Khan, in the other, the helmet of an Imperial Fist champion. Last of all, his boot rested on the proud helm of a Blood Angel's Lord Captain, grinding it into the Terran dirt.
"The stasis field is down,"
Sirion pointed out.
"It is,"
Talos nodded, crossing to one of the secondary consoles, ringing the central plinth. His fingers tapped against several plastic keys. As soon as the final key clicked, the chamber burst with a flood of agonized screaming. The cries were organic, human, but with a tinny edge and an undertone of buzzing crackle. Sirion winced. It was that loud. His helm took a couple of seconds to filter the sound to tolerable levels. He didn't need to ask the scream's origin.
"What have we done to him?" he asked.
The screaming died as Talos killed the power feed from the sarcophagus to the external speakers.
"That is what Varial and Deltrian are working on."
It seems likely that Malkarion's wounds at Krythe have left his mind shattered beyond recovery. There is no telling what he would do if we connected him to a dreadnought chassis. For all we know, he would turn on all of us. Sirion thought over his next words with exceptional care.
Brother,
Talos turned to him. Speak.
I have supported you, haven't I? You wear the mantle of our commander, but it doesn't quite fit.
The prophet nodded.
I have no desire to lead anything. I'm hardly keeping it a secret.
Can you not see me doing all I can to restore our true captain? I know, brother. You are the living embodiment of someone in the wrong place at the wrong time. But you are coping. The raid on Sagualsa was a fine touch, as was sending the salamanders running at Vicon Point. I don't care what you're planning. The others are either content to trust your judgment or lose themselves in indulgence in the meantime. But this...
I know, Talos said. Trust me, I know.
He's a Legion hero. You will live and die by how you treat him, Talos.
I am not blind to that.
The prophet ran his hand across the graven image on the surface of the sarcophagus.
I told them to let him die after Krythe. He'd earned the respite of oblivion. But Malek, a curse upon him wherever he is, countermanded my order. And when Deltrian smuggled the coffin aboard, it changed everything. He hadn't died after all. Perhaps I was wrong to believe him too melancholy to survive in this shell. Since he'd fought for life when he could so easily have died... We could have used his guidance, Sirion. He should have stood with us again.
Sirion gripped his brother's shoulder guard.
Tread with care, Talos. We stand on the edge of everything coming unraveled.
He looked at the sarcophagus himself for several long moments.
What did the Flayer and the Tech Adept suggest?
Both of them believe he is ruined beyond recovery. They also both concur that he could still be formidable, if unreliable, in battle.
Variel suggested controlling Malkarion with pain injectors and focused excruciators.
Talos shook his head.
Like an animal, collared by unkind masters and trained by beatings.
Sirion expected no less from either of those two.
And what will you do?
Talos hesitated.
What would you do in my place?
Truly, I'd flush the organic remains into the void without any of the Legion knowing, and install one of the grievously wounded warriors in his place. Spread the word that Malkarion died during the rituals of resurrection. Then there would be no one to blame.
The prophet turned to face him.
How noble of you.
Look at the armor we wear. Witness the cloak of flayed flesh worn by Uzas, the skulls hanging from our belts, the skinned faces draped over Vario's pauldrons. There is nothing of nobility in us. Necessity is all we know.
Talos watched him for what seemed an age.
Is there a reason for this sudden proselytizing?
Sirion thought of Lucorophus and the bleeding eye's words.
Just my caring nature, he smiled. So, what will you do?
I have ordered Variel and Deltrian to see if they can calm him down with synapse suppressors and chemicals. There may be a way to reach him yet.
And if that fails?
I will deal with that possibility when it becomes an unarguable truth. For now, it is time we played our hand. Octavia's time has come.
The Navigator? Is she ready for this? Whatever this is,
he added silently. Her readiness is immaterial, said Talos, for she has no choice. The Echo of Damnation rode the tides, powered by plasma fusion, driven by the sentient heart at the ship's core, and guided by the third eye of a woman born of humanity's ancestral homeworld. Talos stood by her throne, his own eyes closed, listening to the sounds of the screaming sea. Souls crashed against the hull, mixed in with the very life flesh of demons, shaking the warship and rippling over them in an endless howling tide. He listened. For the first time in decades, he truly listened, and heard once more the music of his father's throne room. A breathy sigh hissed from his parted lips. Gone was the doubt. Gone were the concerns of how best to lead the few warriors that remained to him, and how he should spend the lives of his slaves. Why hadn't he done this before? Why had he never noticed the similarity in sound until Octavia pointed it out? He knew all the tales that warned of listening too close to the warp song, but they all went blissfully ignored. The Navigator was sweating, staring into a thousand shades of black. One moment the darkness screamed at her, expressing its pain through souls bursting against the hull. The next, it called to her, nameless things beckoning with the same claws that raked along the ship's metal skin. The tides writhed with the same coiling chaos found within a nest of serpents. Flashes of sick light winked between the overlapping warp stuff. Either the distant Astronomican or the deceptions of demons, it didn't matter to Octavia. She aimed the ship for every pulse of light that flickered ahead, crashing through the void tides, with the power and weight behind one of the species' oldest warships. The cold waves of unreality burst apart at their prow and trembled in their wake, forming shapes no human eyes could ever perceive. The Echo itself remained in the back of her consciousness. Unlike the sullen, contrary soul of the Covenant, the Echo of Damnation had a great, eager heart. Terra had no sharks, but she knew of them from the Throne World's archives. Predators within the ancient seas, forever needing to move forward lest they die. That was the Echo in a single, simple concept. It desired nothing more than to run with all its strength, breaking through the barriers of the warp and leaving the material realm behind.
You have listened too long and too hard to the warp's call, she chided the ship as sweat ran down her temples. Burn, 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 it pulsed back. More strength to engines, more fire in core.
She felt the ship racing harder in response. Her own instinctive impulses flashed through the neural-sensitive cables plugged into her temples and wrists, curbing the sudden leap in thrust. The Echo's primal excitement snapped back, entering her body through the same ports, sending her into a delicious shiver.
Calm, she pulsed. Calm.
The ship's reply was another effort to increase thrust. Octavia could almost see the slave crews in the cavernous chambers of the engine decks, sweating and shouting and dying to feed the generators at the pace demanded of them. For a moment, she thought she could feel them all, the way the Echo felt them, as a hive of flea-like, insignificant sentience itching within her bones. The Navigator pulled back from the mesh of sensation, rejecting the ship's primitive emotions and settling firmer within herself. The cold kiss of her chamber's air supply touched her sweating skin, causing another involuntary shudder. She felt as though she'd been holding her breath under boiling water.
Stop it,
she whispered into the vox orb drifting before her face. Its tiny suspensors kept it afloat, a half-skull rendered into a portable vocabulator, and transmitted her words to the crew and servitors on the command deck above.
Starboard, 3 degrees. Pressurized thrust to compensate for warp density. Axial stabilizers are...
On and on she mumbled, staring into the darkness, sharing control of the warship with the vessel's crew and its own angry heart. Outside, the pantheon of ethereal inhumanity raged against the ship's Gela field. The tide itself recoiled, burned and bleeding, each time it broke against the diving vessel. Octavia scarcely spared a thought for the deep, cold intelligences hiding in the endless void. It took all her concentration to focus on the narrow path she was ramming through the sea of souls. She could endure the screaming, for she was born to see through the unseeable. The warp held few secrets or surprises for her. But the Echo's eager joy threatened her focus like nothing else ever had. Even the Covenant's mulish resistance had been easier to overcome. That required force. This required temperance. It required a lie told to herself. That she didn't share the same savage joy. That she didn't feel the same need to burn the engines unto self-destruction, running faster and diving deeper than any soul, artificial or otherwise, had ever done before. The Echo's dark delight filtered back through the neural feeds, spicing her blood with excitement's charge. Octavia pulled back from the bond, forcing her breathing to slow as her body reacted to the symbiotic pleasure in the most primal of ways.
Slower, she breathed,
sending the word back to the ship's core even as she spoke it aloud.
Gela's stability is wavering. You are wavering.
The Echo's dull sentience pulsed back.
A slave to reason.
The ship gave another shiver in sympathy to her own. This one was tighter, born of tensed muscles and clenched teeth. It spoke of control and focus, as Octavia's will blanketed the ship's machine spirit.
I am your navigator, she whisper hissed the silent words, and I guide you.
The Echo of Damnation never communicated with actual language. Its pulses of emotion and urges formed words only as Octavia's human mind fought to find meaning in them. Its surrender now never even manifested as false utterances, though. She merely felt it cower back from her surge of willpower, taking its inflicted emotions with it.
Better, she smiled through the tears of sweat. Better. Close now, navigator,
it sent back.
I know. Beacons, she mumbled aloud. Beacons in the night. The blade of light. The Emperor's will given shape. A trillion screaming souls. Every man and woman and child ever given to the Golden Throne's soul engines since the dawn of the One Empire. I see them. I hear them. I see the sound. I hear the light.
Whispering voices slithered into her ears. Deck by deck, the word was being passed, so pathetically slow in its reliance on mortal speech. Octavia had no need to stare at hololithic star maps. She cared nothing for the rattle and clang of deep void Auspex readers.
All stop, she whispered through lips bright with spit. All stop!
The hand on her shoulder could have come a minute, an hour, or a year later. She wasn't sure.
Octavia, said the low, low voice.
She closed her secret eye and opened her human ones. Vitreous humor gummed them, leaving them sore as she forced them open. She felt the soft caress of her bandana being draped over her forehead.
Water,
she demanded, her voice a hoarse rasp. Her attendants muttered nearby, but the hands bringing the dirty canteen to her lips were armored in midnight blue. Even the tiniest knuckle joints gave soft growls. She swallowed, caught her breath, and swallowed more. With trembling hands, she wiped the cooling sweat from her face, then pulled the intravenous feeds from her arms. The cables in her temples and throat could remain there for now.
"How long?" she asked at last.
16 nights, said Talos. We are where we need to be.
Octavia closed her eyes as she sank back into the throne. She was asleep before Vullerai covered her shivering form with a blanket.
She must eat, the attendant pointed out. Over 2 weeks. The baby.
Do whatever you wish, Talos said to the bandaged mortal. That is none of my concern. Wake her in 6 hours and bring her to the excruciation chambers. All will be ready by then.
She wore her rebreather again, listening to the sound of her own respiration turned low and throaty. The mask over her nose and mouth stole all sense of taste and scent, leaving only the stale musk of her own breath, tinged with a chlorine edge that stung the back of her tongue. Talos stood behind her, ostensibly to oversee the moment. She wondered if it really remained in order to prevent her from running. 6 hours sleep wasn't enough, not even nearly enough. Octavia felt her weariness as a physical sickness, leaving her weak and slow, as if her blood beat around her body at a muted rate.
Do it, Talos ordered her.
She didn't, at least not immediately. She walked among the chained bodies, between the slabs on which they lay, weaving through the Medicaid servitors, monotasked with keeping the carcasses alive just a little while longer. The husks laid out on each table scarcely resembled humans in any real sense. One was a mess of musculature and stripped veins, twitching its final moments away on the surgery table. The flayed ones were little better. Neither were those now deprived of their tongues, lips, hands, and noses. Ruination was complete on each and every one of them. Desecration had never seen such variety. She was walking through a living monument to fear and pain. This was the Legion's imagination given form. Octavia looked back at Talos, glad he still wore his helm. If she'd seen any pride in his naked eyes in that moment, she would have never been able to tolerate his presence again.
"The Screaming Gallery," she said,
above the muffled moans and beep of pulse trackers.
"Was it like this?"
The Night Lord nodded.
"Very much so. Now, do it," he said again.
Octavia took a stale breath, moved to the closest table, and removed her bandana.
"I will end it for you,"
she whispered to the organic wreckage that had once been a man. It turned its eyes towards her with the last of its strength, lifted its wet gaze to the navigator's third eye, and looked into absolute oblivion.